A lot of times you go into a place and you find a good sign, you're like, oh, this is a spot, and you sit and hunt it. But I was like, all right, I found a good spot, but I want to make sure that this could be the best that I found. And I scouted for 2 more days after that first day, finding that one good spot, ended up coming back in there because it was really the best sign that I had found, and ended up killing deer first 2 hours I had set in a tree.
Hey guys, welcome to the National Deer Association's Deer Season 365 podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossman, and we got a great episode lined up for you this week as I get a couple of my favorite YouTubers on here, Jeremy Aaron and Daniel Lemon of Do It Yourself Hunter. And if you're not familiar with them, they're a couple of Southern guys who travel all across the country chasing deer and turkey and other critters on DIY hunts, mostly on public land. And they're very successful at what they do. So being a public land hunter myself, I was excited to get them on here and pick their brains a little bit about their process for choosing and breaking down these tracts of public land that they hunt and how they consistently manage to be successful doing so. So be sure to stick around for that conversation. Hey, before we get started though, this week's episode is brought to you by longtime NDA sponsor, Redneck Blinds. If you've ever hunted with a redneck, then you know there's nothing quite like them. From superior comfort and quiet, spacious interiors to the ultra-rugged construction and ultimate scent control, nothing out-hunts or outperforms a redneck blind. So no matter how you hunt or who you hunt with, always hunt with a redneck. Visit your local dealer or check them out online at redneckblinds.com. Redneck Blinds, there's nothing redneck about them. Hey, one more thing before we get on the phone with Jeremy and Daniel. The clock is ticking on our 2024 United for Deer Spring Sweepstakes, which as far as I know is NDA's biggest sweepstakes ever. There's just a few weeks left to get your chances on one of 5 major prize packages featuring items like a Tracker 800 SX Crew Cab UTV, a $10,000 Academy Sports and Outdoors gift card, a PH Outdoors G3 no-till drill, a premium Kentucky elk tag, an Illinois deer hunt, and a whole lot more. Hey, tickets start at just $20, and all proceeds raised will go towards NDA's mission of ensuring the future of wild deer, wildlife habitat, and hunting. To get your tickets today, head over to deerassociation.com and look for the United for Deer Sweepstakes banner on our homepage. Hey guys, with that, let's jump on the phone with Jeremy and Daniel to talk all about planning and executing successful out-of-state deer hunting trips. Well, hey, Jeremy and Daniel, welcome to the Deer Season 365 podcast. Appreciate you guys taking time out to come on here to talk a little deer hunting with me.
Well, appreciate you, Brad, for having us here.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure.
Yes, we always love talk deer hunting now.
Yeah, I find that that's the case with most of my guests. Yeah, they all love talking deer hunting, and as well as myself. So, looking forward to our discussion. Before we dive into the topic at hand, though, I guess Jeremy, I'll let you start. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how the whole do-it-yourself hunter came about?
Like I said, I'm 57. Like I said, I had a passion for hunting my whole life. My early 20s, I had a goal that I wanted to make a living hunting. You know, that was sort of when things were sort of getting on TV and stuff. And I'm like, man, I've been self-employed my whole life. I thought, well, we'll figure this out. We started filming a little bit in the late 90s. Had a show on Outdoor Channel in 2003 for 2 quarters. Didn't really work out too good then. Had three small kids at home, and it just decided, hey, it's not going to work in. Years later, sort of got back and still filmed off and on the whole time. But it's when self-filming, when the cameras got smaller and the camera arms and everything, I sort of got back in it. I think, what year did I kill that deer in Iowa?
2016.
It was the first deer I killed on video was self-filming. And Daniel come along. His dad hunted with me some back in the early 2000s. And I guess I seen in him, he was a young me. And I thought, well, heck. I think we can do this. he really figured the computer side of it out and edited and everything. And like I said, that's sort of how it got started and where we are now.
Good deal. What about you, Daniel? How did you get into hunting? And you know, I know Jeremy told a little bit there about how he got you involved in the do-it-yourself hunter, but kind of lead us up to that. What got your start in hunting in general?
Well, I grew up hunting from when I was, I can't even remember. My daddy took me hunting when I was 7 months old, behind the house in a little shooting house, and put me in it. And I went to sleep and he ended up killing a deer that afternoon. So you could say I've been hunting since before I could walk, literally. But since then, you know, I think I killed my first turkey when I was six, first deer when I was seven. And from there, it just kind of snowballed with me, and I just kept enjoying it and wanting to do more and go new places and see new things. And Jeremy really got me into the traveling part, going to new states and trying new things. And, you know, that just kind of where I got started and kind of how I come about doing all this traveling and hunting and doing the YouTube with him. And that's just where it kind of started with me.
Well, good deal. And yeah, Jeremy, I understand about the whole TV thing. I think me and my wife have been together, I guess, over 30 years now. And I think the only time we ever came close to divorce is when I was chasing, you know, trying to do a TV show myself. So I understand. I had two small kids at home, and yeah, that's a lot of work and a lot of pressure goes into that outdoor television for sure.
It does. There's a lot of travel time and stuff. And like I said, you understand where I'm coming from. Like I said, I was sort of the same boat too. She said, "You going to choose hunting or us?" So, you know, like I said, I knew better which one I better choose long term. But it's paying dividends now. I got the girls out of the house. We have three girls. Had a lot of fun with them in school playing travel softball. They all three play softball. But after they got grown and gone and out of college and on their own, man, like I said, I'm pretty much semi-retired now. I've been retired since probably 52, last 5 years. And you know, absolutely love life, love getting out and hunting, meeting new people, and hope to encourage other folks, young guys out there, to hey, really invest your money wise and work hard when you're young, but set you a goal that hey, I want to be able to do this when I get to a certain age. You know, my goal was retiring when I was 40. I didn't quite make it because the kids wouldn't grow, but when after I hit 50, my dad died when I was right before I turned 50 years old, and I basically said, hey, I seen him work his whole life. He never did slow down till right there at the end. But when he slowed down, heck, he got sick and died. I'm like, man, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get out and travel. My wife and I, we both been to all 50 states. She loves to travel too. So we do a lot of that in the summertime. And one good thing, you said you've been married 30, we've been married 33. That's one thing I tell a lot of the young guys, man, there's a lot of commitment there, but there's a lot of rewards in the long run if you both stick together. Because she's a school teacher, she's got the insurance now. That's one reason I don't have to work as hard.
Oh yeah, don't even get me started on the insurance thing. Shoo. But yeah, I'd say you definitely made the right choice way back when on the TV show and doing what you did, and that's awesome to see how far you came and what you guys are doing now. And I assume you guys have probably been out doing a little turkey hunting at this point. How's that going?
Yeah, it's ours open the 15th, March 15th. We both killed a bird apiece, so both missed a bird or so. Daniel's really trying to kill him with a bow this time. Well, I tried to kill one too. We both, man, a turkey ain't a big target.
Yeah.
You know, you got to hit in a real small area to kill that sucker.
And I've been trying to play with these decapitating broadheads, and finally figured out a way to get them to fly. So that's where I'm going to now. I was just trying to like shoot them in the body, but they got so much feathers. You know, I was shooting them through the feathers, thinking I was hitting where it was supposed to be, and I just cut feathers on them. But I was like, you know, that head never moves whenever you shoot at them in the body. They would always drop their feathers or something. It would mess me up when I shoot. So I'm going to try this and see how it works out now.
Yeah, you'd be amazed. And I'm like you said, you figured it out there. It's amazing how much just feathers, are, especially when they're in full strut, are above all them vitals. You can make what looks like a great shot and not get much of anything. I've done a little bit of that myself. Yeah, it's tough. Are you guys hunting them out of a blind, or are you doing it without a blind?
The one I shot at, I was with a bow. I was in a blind. Now Daniel hadn't used a blind.
Yeah, I didn't. I just had maybe a couple of little limbs stuck up in front of me, but I was kind of tucked in a good spot. Had the sun at my back, so I had a really good set not to have a blind.
But we just put a show out a while ago. One of these boys that hunted with us, he killed one in the woods with his bow. That's without a blind, and he used a decoy. But I've never done it, never come close to doing it. Just hunting them in the woods, calling them up, and shooting them in the woods without a blind. But he's killed a couple like that. Alex has.
No, I have not done that. I've shot a few with a bow out of a blind, but yeah, I haven't shot one outside of a blind. That's about as tough as it gets when it comes to turkey hunting, right there. Now, are you guys noticing? Yeah. Now, you guys noticing a decline? That's kind of the big talk right now, is decline in turkey numbers, especially seems like across the Southeast, and a lot of states changing their regulations and stuff, making, lowering the bag limits, that kind of thing. Are you guys seeing that in the areas you're hunting?
The last couple of years traveling, the numbers are definitely down. Here at home, I've got a couple of places and got a couple of places I can hunt. I've really, the last 2 years, is trying to help my habitat. Planted a good bit of milo last year. Did a lot of trapping this year. I've got more turkeys this year than I've had in a long time on a couple of different places I hunt. But like I said, I sort of left them alone. And we had a good hatch the last 2 years. We had so much rain in the last 10 years. Man, 5, 6, 7 years out, we'd get torrential rains in May and June that we'd used to not never get. I think there's a lot of different factors. My personal opinion, I don't think it's as much hunters. I think it's more predators and weather and habitat. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, they got a lot going against them for sure. But yeah, I think you're right. Just like you've seen there on your place, I think there's obviously there's still good pockets where the habitat's good and conditions are right. There's still some plenty of birds out there to be had. But they're definitely some places struggling more than others. But yeah, as a public land hunter myself, I was excited to get you guys on here to kind of pick your brain a little bit about your deer hunting strategies and for choosing and breaking down a new property. A lot of times I know you guys are hunting out of state and properties that aren't real close to you, and you seem to have it down to a science. You guys do well. So looking forward to talking to you about that. And so I guess for a guy or a gal who may be wanting to try their first out of state trip this fall, just kind of start us off by talking about, I guess first, how do you decide even what states you're going to hunt? And then, from there we can kind of get into choosing a specific property.
I'll let Daniel start it.
Well, as far as a state, just, a lot of people, you can pick somewhere that you've always thought about going. There's a lot of good over-the-counter states, especially if you think about later on in the year after some of the draws are over with, that you could go to. But Missouri is kind of a state that I've been looking at as far as wanting to go to. I've never really deer hunted it. I've looked at it for deer hunting, but never deer hunted it. Turkey hunted it a good bit. But a couple of places I've been looking at are just some hard access places with some agriculture. And, when I first started this out-of-state traveling and stuff, I looked for a lot of similar terrain that I was familiar with, that I've already hunted kind of here in the South and kind of knew how deer traveled and what they done. So I kind of wanted to look for similar terrain as far as that goes. Now that I've hunted several states and different types of terrain and places, I kind of can adapt to about anything. But most of the time when I go to a brand new state, I am sort of looking for similar, whether it's rolling hills, but something that I'm used to hunting or kind of know how deer will travel or like to use stuff. Because that just gives you one step ahead going into something new. Because you never know. Once you get there, there's no telling what, what the deer could be doing or where you find the sign. I mean, you can do a ton of e-scouting. I've done plenty of that. I just like finding areas on maps that I think look good. And once I get there is when I really do the fine, go through it with a fine tooth comb and really look and find the perfect spots. And it could be surprising to you where you find them. It may be, you know, just some little block that people overlook all the time. They may be driving right by it, you know, and not even think about it. But that's what you got to look for, is just places that are super overlooked by other people, because that's where the deer feel safe when nobody goes in there, because they know, you know, nobody's really thinking about deer being in there. That's where they like to be, and they like to hide, and they feel safe there.
Yep. Makes sense. So as far as the state, you're just kind of basically just picking one that piques your interest?
Pretty much. That's it. And I like trying to go every year to a new state that I have never been to. Like last year, I went to Ohio, never been to Ohio before. I picked three different blocks of public that I wanted to look at. And the first 3 days, I didn't climb a tree. I just boots on the ground, scouted, looked, and actually, it was the very first place that I looked at. But I just wanted to cover as much as I could just to make sure that the first sign, you know, a lot of times you go into a place and you find a good sign, you're like, oh, this is a spot, and you sit and hunt it. But I was like, all right, I found a good spot, but I want to make sure that this could be the best that I found. And I scouted for 2 more days after that first day, finding that one good spot, ended up coming back in there because it was really the best sign that I had found, and ended up killing deer first two hours I had set in a tree.
And what drew you, I guess, initially, when you said three different, you mean like three different tracks altogether, or was you just talking about three different spots within a one particular piece of public land? Or
it was three different blocks of public that I was looking at, and I've run through a bunch of different areas on those different blocks before I finally decided that first one that I looked at was the best place.
And what kind of, I guess, what drew you to those three areas? What kind of things were you looking for specifically?
Well, when I did my e-scouting on them, what I seen was a bunch of ags around these blocks of public, and most of the woods were on the public. So I was like, all right, private's got food, public's got the cover, the bedding. So that kind of drew me that the more concentration of deer in my mind was going to be on the public in these little tight corners, these hard to access places that nobody was really looking at. And where I ended up killing deer, it was super hard to get in there. You had to go up a creek, you had to walk about 3/4 mile in there. And I happened with my pack raft, I blew it up, paddled up the creek another 3/4 mile, and then walked about another 300 yards to get to this one spot. So it was just a secluded, odd cornered place with food and tons of cover all around it. And it was a really good funnel going up between a big ridge and a corner of a field. And I knew, and I found a bunch of rubs going up through there, no doubt a rub line coming from a bedding to a food feeding area. And I just played the wind on it and got in there and made it work.
And Jeremy, what about you? Any different strategy, or how do you go about picking, or say you've already got the kind of a state in mind, how do you go about picking, you know, some locations to check out that you might want to hunt?
Well, like Daniel said, hunt what you know. I'm a river bottom hunter. I love hunting water. I love using boat for access. So that's when I'm wanting to hunt a new state, that's the first thing I key in and I look for. I look for water access. I mean, boat ramps are not really boat ramps, more navigable. I've got several little boats. I don't need a big boat ramp to get in, because I try to distinguish myself from most of the hunters that are fishermen that has a bigger fishing boat. If it's got a big boat ramp, they can put in it. But if it's got one, it's pretty hard to get that boat in, but still navigable enough I can get up and down it. That's what I'm looking for, that type of terrain. One thing I get this question asked a lot. Like I said, where do you start? I want to go out of state, but where do I start? And I'm like, but there's so many places. I've hunted a lot. I've hunted 22 different states, and a lot of them I would never go back to. But I could hunt a different place the rest of my life every day and never hunt the same one twice. There's plenty of them out there. You just gotta, you gotta worry. Is how, you know, the hunting and traveling like this is what you put in it is what you get out of it. The e-scouting, you can do a lot of it. And I used to do a lot, but I plan on going to a state or two this year. I hadn't hunted. I'm not worried about really scouting. I can wait till the last week and find me a spot or two, like Daniel said, and there's my starting point. That may not be in where I end up hunting, but that's my starting point. When I get there, I do boots on the ground. Daniel, is, I don't know if you've ever seen, he's about 6 foot, weighs 150 pounds. He's got the legs he can walk. I'm 57. I don't like walking as much as I used to. Now, I still can walk, but I can't cover the ground like he can. He can, man. He can get out. He, you know, it's about like cruising tractor timber. He can get through that son of a gun. You know, I was in the timber industry when I say that. But he can cover ground where I strategically look for bottlenecks, water with terrain changes. So, you know, in a river bottom, just a little bit of elevation change in a river bottom changes your species of trees. Or it changes cover. You know, it's mainly the habitat changes just a little bit on a foot or two difference elevation in a flat bottom, big river bottom. So that's, and a lot of it is, if you learn to do it, like I said, Daniel's, was his third, fourth year you've been traveling?
This will be the third year.
This will be his third year. If you ever do it in a state or two, you're confident to go do it anywhere. I'm not going to sit there and say you're going to kill one every time, but you're confident enough to go and say, hey, I can do this. You know, there's a lot of folks who's never done it, just don't have the confidence that, hey, I want to do this, but I don't know if I can do it. And a lot of them say, man, if I spend this for an out-of-state tag, I won't kill a big deer. And I'm like, bud, you're buying a tag. You're not buying a killing license. You got to get out there and do the work. And we've had some guys that's commented back and forth, said, man, I'm glad you encouraged us to do this. The first or second day I was there, man, I had the biggest buck I ever seen in my life just come right by me. There, and them places are like that out there. You know, there are some places you may go that you may not do no good, but that's where you learn from it. The key is what Daniel was saying a while ago was finding isolated places. Think about it. A deer's going to get mature with some age on him. He's got to have a place that he can live several years. And if he's 4 and 5 years old, he's done figured out that safe spot. So, and the way I look at that is think different from most hunters. Don't, because a mature deer don't think like a 2.5-year-old deer.
Now, well, first of all, yeah, I'm getting ready to turn 51, so I understand the not wanting to walk as much as I used to. I understand that part for sure. I'm curious, though, have you seen an increase? Because with a lot of, you know, the YouTube videos and shows like your guys showing folks how you're doing it and getting it done. Have you seen an increase in boat access and guys getting into some of these, you know, tougher to reach places? Are you seeing more competition out there than you did, you know, even 5 years ago?
Maybe some areas, but in general, I just learned how to get away from crowds. I probably hunted 60 days last year. I bet I didn't run into 4 or 5 people in the woods. I get in there early. You know, I might run into somebody. I'm really around scouting in the middle of the day to boat ramp or pull into a parking area. How we hunt, very few folks are going to do it. I don't see it. Like I said, my first time I got to go out west was in 88. No, it was in 84. So I've been doing it a long time. Certain areas, certain good areas that's been publicized, easy access, big areas, yes, they get a lot of pressure. Opening weekends and holidays, yeah, there are going to be a lot of people there. But I'm just telling you, I don't run into nobody. Daniel ran into a few folks in Illinois last year on a couple of places, but there was easy access right on the side of the road. So yeah, I don't think so. I don't. I know you see a lot of guys post on these Facebook groups and stuff. Oh, man, all these non-resident hunters and all that. I like companies. I know how to work around them.
Hey, I wanted to take just a quick break from the interview to let you know that the work we do at the National Deer Association wouldn't be possible without the support from partners like Johnny Morris, Bass Pro Shops, and Cabela's, and their customers throughout North America. A grant from the Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's Outdoor Fund is supporting the NDA's national initiative called Improving Access, Habitat, and Deer Hunting on Public Lands, with a goal of improving 1 million acres of federal and state-controlled lands by 2026. This grant is directly accelerating work in this initiative to address forest vigor and access issues in 6 states. In the end, this will address declines in deer hunter numbers, habitat quality, and hunter access, helping to improve wildlife conservation for generations to come. Now back to the show.
Well, it sounds like a big part of your strategy, obviously, is getting away from that crowd. So what ways, and you've already talked about water access, obviously, is one way you guys do that, but kind of what, as you're e-scouting and boots on the ground scouting, what are you looking for, I guess, specifically to kind of make sure you don't have those interactions with other hunters?
Well, when I get there, I do a lot of scouting. I sort of case in that place out what I look at. I drive all the way around it. I look and see where hunters are, you know, where they're parked at. Well, another thing, when I go into a new area, if it falls on the weekend, first morning, I'm going to get up and ride around and see where everybody's at. I want to see what they're hunting. That and just look for that odd place. Sometimes it's not a big place. You know, I really got Daniel into solo hunting instead of hunting with a buddy. You don't need near as much ground with one person hunting as you do going as a group. You know, a lot of these guys that's going 4 or 5 to a group, yeah, they got to have a big place. Well, there's probably other groups that's 4 and 5 that's doing the same thing. That's what I look for, is just odd places. And the states. I hadn't hunted Illinois till last year in 15 years. Main reason is because most of these southern boys, that's where they're going. I think different than the rest of them. I've hunted a lot of the Midwest that a lot of folks sort of overlook. You know, the biggest deer I've killed is in a state that folks wouldn't think of whitetails in.
What was that? You cut out just a little bit. You said the biggest buck you ever killed what?
Yeah, one of the biggest bucks I've killed was in a state that you wouldn't think whitetail is not known for whitetails. So that's what I'm saying. Just think different. I know Georgia, y'all that southeastern side or eastern side, you know, them western states are a lot further out. Another tactic we like using is when we sort of doing our planning. Like Daniel said, he hadn't done his plan yet. We've learned you don't want to have a hunt in, say, Ohio, and then you draw Kansas, because we're rut hunters. We're not early season hunters. Our best success is we hunt the rut. We hunt it when deer are up on their feet traveling. You know, we hunt bottlenecks more. We've just learned that's our strength when we really have success. So if you've got a good cold front comes through and you kill a deer out in Ohio, man, you don't want me spending half a day driving to Kansas, because it's a very short window right there to really be productive.
Okay. So, yeah, you're cramming most of your hunts then into a fairly narrow window. So I assume you're picking out, you know, states kind of right there together.
Yeah, that's like this year. I'm looking at Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. I'm going to try staying in that 4 state. And like this, I've just learned this over years of doing it, because I have been scattered out from on the west side of Nebraska all the way to, you know, being Indiana. A couple years ago, I shot a deer in Indiana. I don't remember what day it was. Pretty good deer. A major cold front come through. Well, I went home for a few days, and I went to Kansas. Well, heck, I missed a lot of it. The best couple of days by traveling. You know, that's just one tip I get. But I know a lot of the guys out there are not looking at multiple state hunting. They're looking at one state hunting right now. But
all right, once you get boots on the ground, you talked about, obviously, you know, you're wanting to get away from the crowds. But what are you looking for to kind of find that the spot? As far as, you know, whether that be some habitat features or deer sign or terrain features, or I'm sure a combination of all, what kind of things are you specifically looking for that's going to say, all right, this is where I need to set up, or this is where I need to be, at least initially?
Well, the sign, you're looking for deer sign after you get there. You're looking for fresh sign, scrapes. You're looking for a scrape with big tracks in it. Rubs. A rub can tell you a lot. You know, we call them hook bushes. I don't know what y'all call them. We call them that's our southern slang for a rub, is a hook bush. How high it's hooked, what kind of gouge marks it's got. A rub can tell you a lot about a deer's antlers. I really look for that. I really like finding a scrape with big tracks. Michael Perry, we've been around him a little bit. He made a comment. I like seeing tracks going both ways in a scrape. And that makes sense too, because he's coming in from different directions instead of sort of running a scrape line one way. Creek crossings with tracks in it. What else do you look for, Daniel?
Pretty much that. I like, when I look at a scrape, I like seeing it work from a bunch of different directions. I like a bunch of different size tracks in it. It tells me that it's a community scrape with multiple bucks using it. In any kind of like creek crossings, I like finding something, say if it's a big steep creek, you know, 10, 15 foot tall banks on it, and then you get in some places and it's got a slope in it that ain't straight up and down, you know, that's good places, kind of funnels sort of, that they're going to come and use to cross those certain spots because the banks are just too steep anywhere else to cross.
And if you're hunting in the hills a little bit, look for benches, saddles. You know, there's a lot of ways to hunt them too.
What about as far as does cover play into, you know, the equation at all there? I mean, if you find that good scrape that looks good, has some big tracks in it, it's a community scrape, but you know, there's no cover within 200 yards in any direction. Does it still interest you or does that even play a factor into it?
Oh yeah, it's got to be cover around, you know, food and bedding is every day they do. When that rut though, that buck's is traveling a little bit further out. You know, it can be, I don't really look for bedding cover as much as I do cover, because when a buck gets after a doe, they like to get in cover, but they still like to see.
Yeah.
You know, a CRP field. In the south, a thin pine plantation. That's not super thick. Just seem like that buck likes to push them in areas like that he can hammer up but still see what's around him.
They like movable cover. They like to be hid, but they also like to be able to get out of there quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys look at bedding. They know that deer's in that bedding there and he's going over here to feed. When you get hunting rut, it's a little bit different because that deer, instead of him moving 100 yards, he's liable to move a mile. So you got a lot better chance of catching him out of his main bedding area. In my opinion, what I've learned, and when we go into an area like that, we're not hunting a Pacific deer. We're just hunting a mature deer. You know, if he's got the body size on him, you can tell he's got an A structure on him. That's what we're hunting.
And now, do you, like with you hunting Kentucky and Ohio and Indiana and Illinois this year, will you make a trip up there prior to season to do any scouting, or is it just strictly some e-scouting and then show up when it's time to hunt and scout?
No, I'm leaving next week on turkey hunt. And I'm going to try turkey hunting several of them states. So, yes, I spend time in beforehand. Yeah, I do. But some advice I'd give to some guys and gals that don't have the time. My wife, we've been in all 50 states. You can bet you when we go traveling in the summertime, I'm scouting. You know, it may have been 2 or 3 years since I went through an area. But if it'll look good to me on a map, my own action hunt stand has got a mark on it, and it basically said it looked good, and it's got the date, so I knew when I was in that area that I wasn't hunting it, but I knew what it looked like. So, yeah, I would definitely say if you could, it helps. And another thing, like Daniel said, he scouted it 3 days before he hit that Ohio, and he sat back and waited on that. He waited on weather. He knew when a major front was coming. He knew when deer was going to be up on his feet, and he was doing all his scouting before that front come through. And we do that a lot. I know guys that's got a 9-to-5 job and they got to put their schedules in months in advance. It's hard for them to play weather, but that's one thing we really do is because we've learned is you're a lot more successful that day of the front and 2 days after than most other times.
Yeah, I know that can be tough, you know, giving up some days of your hunt to scout like that, like you're talking about, but it seems like a lot of the guys that I have on this podcast that are successful the way you guys are, that's part of it. You know, they're spending a lot of times as much time scouting or more than they do actually hunting. And, you know, that's obviously leads to their success, but I know it can be tough to do. It can be tough to give up those days. I've been out of state on a few times myself. And, you know, when you get there, I know you're amped up. You know, the first thing you want to do is get out there and get in the woods. But, yeah, I think that's good advice there.
Yeah. Another thing I like to say, I would say 60 or 70% of the bigger deer we kill them the first or second set in a place. It just seems like the longer you sit in a place, your odds start dropping. So that's why we like to scout and climb, or I do. And I think Daniel sets back. You get your spot. He's more of I find spot A, B, and C, and a lot of them are in different wind directions. You know, the stands for a different wind. And he's had super good luck doing that.
So how many sits will you give a location before you decide, hey, it's time to move on to the next spot?
I really like going in middle of the day, hanging, hunt the evening, get back in there, leave all my camera, leave my set up, get back in there at daylight next morning and set it to lunch. Now, then it's according if I see something, and it's according if the wind's staying the same for that stand. Sometimes you may just have to move around 100 yards or so, or move, if you're hunting around a slough or something, a pinch point, you may move around. But a lot of it's the wind, and what you see is how long you stay.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I'm about the same way on that. I don't give it more. I'll either give it a full day, whether it's going in, hunting evening, and then the next morning and moving, or if I found something and go in, a morning and set all day, especially if the wind's good, and if I'm seeing stuff too, that just makes a day go by faster. If you're seeing deer and they're not knowing you're there, getting by you without getting detected, that makes a day go by. And when you can get away with it like that, if it's something like that, I don't mind staying a couple of days. But most of the time, it's a day's worth of hunting before I'm moving, going somewhere else.
Now, do you guys use trail cameras at all?
If the states allow it, and we know we're going to be there a little while, yes, we do. But a lot of them are getting where they're cutting that out, so you can't really depend on that all the time. Yeah. But yeah, this is a handy, especially traveling areas. I've went to places where I killed the big deer. I was talking about in a western state. I went out there in the summer and late summer and put out some cameras just to have an idea what size class deer was in there. Because a lot of time you go to a new place, you think, well, I'm going to shoot a 120-inch deer first day, or I need to hold out for a bigger one. I sort of like to know what's in there. But another thing I like to do is. And I've learned this over time, is hunting a lot of places. You meet a lot of guys. You meet a lot of, sometimes, most time they're going to be local guys, but a lot of times it may be other out-of-staters you run into that, man, you share a lot of information and knowledge. But, from a non-resident point of view, when somebody gives you information, don't give it away. Because, when somebody tells me something, they're not going to share it with nobody else. And I don't hardly share it with Daniel. We both got a... What I basically say, you wouldn't know anything about that information if somebody wouldn't have never give it to you. So look at it like, hey, that's their information.
I'm curious, having hunted a lot of different states now, the both of you from the South to the Midwest, and being Southerners yourself, and me living here in Georgia, curious to hear, kind of what kind of differences and maybe even similarities that you've seen between hunting, here in the South, Mississippi, Louisiana, compared to Midwestern states.
There's a big difference.
Deer size is the main thing. Sure. Way bigger up north. And I wouldn't necessarily say easier. I think what the difference is, a main difference, besides them being bigger, is there's a bigger number of mature bucks than there is in the South.
Their age structure. They get older in these areas. And a lot of it's because of their hunt season, their limit of, the residents and non-residents killed in some states, like Iowa. There's no doubt Iowa's my favorite state to hunt. You can't draw but every several years. It takes several years to draw it. They restrict non-residents. And that's what makes it better. They don't have a gun season during the rut. Now, deer, ours is in a lot thicker cover. They're harder to see. They're harder to find. You can have a picture of a buck in 40 acres, and he's staying in it, and you might not see him all season. Yeah. They're nocturnal. Where you can get in this more open country, you can sit back and see him. You're liable to walk through and bump him and see him. And I try encouraging these northern boys all the time. Y'all come down here and hunt the South. I welcome you. Because there's a lot of southern boys go up north, kill y'all deer. Y'all come on down here. And a lot of us in the South, we got such a long gun season. That's just the way we always hunt it,
Yeah, and I'm a transplant. I'm originally from Kentucky, so yeah, it's definitely taken some getting used to. I've been down here, about 12 years now. But yeah, it was a whole different world. Not only, like you said, the hunting seasons. I went from a 16-day gun season to, we got like 3 months almost here in Georgia. And just the cover, it's cover everywhere. They can bed anywhere down here. It's not like Kentucky and even the more Midwestern states. So it was definitely took some adjusting for sure. And I still don't claim to have them figured out by any means. Well, what do you guys, Jeremy, you already mentioned some states that you have planned this year. What about you, Daniel? What do you have planned for the upcoming season?
I really ain't got nothing planned yet, because like last year, I'd planned for a good while to go to Minnesota originally. And then last minute, I decided to go to Ohio. Like literally the week before I left, I decided to go to Ohio. So I really don't have a set plan. You know, I've got a few states I put in draws for, and it kind of depends on those, whether I get them, whether I don't. And I'll just kind of add a few states around them if I do end up drawing any. But we'll have to play it by ear and see what my year's going to turn into.
Well, guys, let's. I like to wrap these type of interviews up with the question, just for our listeners. Again, maybe somebody that's never done an out of state public land hunt like this. So, I'll give each of you the opportunity to just kind of give your one key piece of advice that you'd give to a new hunter, you know, wanting to give it a try this season.
My advice would be is don't set and wait on it. Just do it. And I guarantee you, you'll get a lot more fun than what you think it'll be out of it. Don't sit there and be like, oh, am I going to kill a deer? Am I not? Is it going to be worth going? Trust me, if you go, it will be worth going.
Yeah. Just look, go to have fun. The scenery and the people you meet, scouting new ground. I love going to a place I've never been and walking woods and seeing sign. And, you know, that's what I encourage dudes. Hey, just look at it. It's a learning process. There's one thing I always say is it's like going to school. When you walked into first grade compared to when you graduated out of the 12th grade, look how much knowledge you learned from that first or 12th grade. So that's why I say, hey, the first time you ever go, it's like you walking into the first grade. You just be all eyes and ears and be wanting to learn. Hey, and it's there to learn. If you go 12 different years, hey, it'll be just like you graduated the 12th grade. Look at the knowledge you've accumulated.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good analogy. And yeah, I can guarantee I'm right there with you. I've like I said, I've just been on a handful of out of state hunts, and you know, probably more than not was not successful as far as bringing home an animal. But I can't ever remember a time where I came home and said, "Man, I wish I hadn't have done that." You know, it's just. I always had a great time and made a lot of memories. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I'd do them every year if I could.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing I always say. If you ever do it once, when you get home, you're planning for the next year. It's addicting. It says, and that's why it's so popular. I think it's good for hunting. You know, when a lot of folks say it's crowded, no, it's not crowded. I promise you, I've been hunting out of state for 40 years. Things have changed. But I'm just telling you, we need as many hunters involved to help protect what we love to do for the next generation. I'm just telling you that, y'all.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's one thing that frustrates me when you see so many hunters, you know, especially on social media, talking about how they wish their state would, you know, jack the prices up on non-residents. And man, that just frustrates me. I mean, that, you know, you should be encouraging folks to get out there and take these kind of trips and not discouraging it. But
yeah, that is so true. Well,
cause yeah, go ahead.
We done a podcast with Cousin Strick. Let me say this. And he had an analogy that made so much sense. He said there's 20% of the population diehard hunters. There's 20% of the population that absolutely hate it, would love to tear it down. He said, you don't worry about them. The 60% in the middle is the one you got to worry about the perspective of hunting. He said, because it's all going to come to a vote one day. If especially all this public land we're talking about, the population's got to say so if you hunt it or not. And you know, I say you better look at it that way. You know, it may be 10 years, maybe 50 years, maybe 100 years, but if it gets where hunting is unpopular and the majority don't like it, they can cut it out on the public land.
Well, guys, for folks who would kind of maybe want to follow along with you and see how your season goes, whether it be turkey season or deer season this fall, what's the best way for them to keep up with you guys?
Our Facebook page and our YouTube channel, Do It Yourself Hunter. We post on there much as we can. And love sharing it with y'all.
And one little plug I want to get, especially you're in Georgia, that Dalton, Georgia, that Mobile Hunters Expo, that's really big for out of state hunting, especially if you want to do the mobile, the lightweight, and that's pretty much what most folks do, especially when they're out of state. Hey, I encourage y'all to come do it. But we're going to try to get a little competition started between the northern and southern guys. I told Christopher, I believe we can get more southern guys at the southern show than the northern guys get at the northern show. So get the word out. Y'all southern boys, y'all come to that southern show now.
Yeah, absolutely. I plan on being there myself for sure. And yeah, I'll look you guys up, definitely. And we'll be sure to, I'll include links to your all's, I'll include links to your all's Facebook page and YouTube channel and in the show notes for anybody who wants to check those out, and would encourage the listeners to subscribe to your channel and enjoy some of those public land out-of-state hunts. And wish you guys, definitely wish you guys the best for the upcoming season.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, that wraps up our interview with Jeremy and Daniel of Do-It-Yourself Hunter. Thanks so much for checking out this episode of the Deer Season 365 podcast. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the show. You know, you can find us on all the popular podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and several more. So about anywhere you could listen to podcasts, you should be able to find us there. Or you can just go to deerassociation.com/podcast and subscribe directly from our website. Hey, we'd also love it if you take just a second to leave us a 5-star rating or a written review. You know, those both help us climb the podcasting charts and be more visible to future listeners. So we would appreciate any support you could give us there. For more information about the National Deer Association, you can visit our website again at deerassociation.com. From there, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter. And hey, just enjoy some of our several hundred articles of free content right there on our website, covering everything from hunting strategy to food plots, habitat improvement, deer management, you name it. If it's deer hunting or deer management related, we got some good content right there on our website available to you. So check that out. And of course, you can always find us on all the popular social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, at Deer Association. So again, thanks for listening to the Deer Season 365 podcast, the podcast where deer season never ends.